Welcome back, Joe Torti's show, 97.5 The Fanatic. We're together until 10 o'clock tonight. Tyler Zulli's producing the program. Are we clear as to whether there are going to be awards given out? Surely there's not going to be an all-star break or anything like that, but are there going to be teams announced? Like all-star teams? Are there going to be MVPs?
I would imagine you'll get awards. You're definitely not going to get an all-star game. There's no way.
No.
You're going to play 20 games or 30 games and then stop?
Well, I feel like you couldn't. Well, that's the thing. I feel like you couldn't stop, right? If you're trying to cram everything in before September, what'd they say, 27th is their cutoff date? Then they're not going to stop for a mid-fall classic at this point, right? I guess they're not going to do that. So that's out the door. Are they giving out awards? Like Rookie of the Year and stuff?
I think they should.
Okay.
Why not?
All right.
I mean, you think about, it's a complete season.
It is a complete season.
It's just not in the way that we're used to.
Okay, so I don't know if this is better news. I don't think it is. I don't think this is better news for the Phillies. The plan is for teams to play 40 games in division and 20 games interleague with their geographic counterparts. So it's East versus East, etc. So that's 20 games against the AL East. It might be a little better if you like the Phillies' chances in the NL East. I don't necessarily.
So you're going to play 4 games against each AL East team.
Yeah.
Would my assumption being, based on just, you know, obviously we can't predict the future, but you're going to go 1-3 against the Yankees. Probably going to go 1-3 against the Rays. Now, you should go 3-1 against Toronto and Baltimore to get you back to .500.
And then Boston.
The Red Sox are kind of up in the air. You don't know how good they're going to be.
You can survive the AL East. I think the NL East is just tough, though.
It's not any easier.
That's what I mean. It's teams that know you.
Even if you can find a way to get yourself to 10-10 in the AL East, I would not be shocked. There's no doubt in my mind that the Phillies could very realistically be 15-25 in those 40 games. And then you finish the season, what, 25-35? And that's how the season ends?
Great success.
That's not good.
Are the Phillies, I know that you look at the Phillies and you have a natural DH, right? There's a natural candidate that you have in Jay Bruce to be your designated hitter, you know, most days, right?
I think you've got two.
Who's the other one that you'd go
with?
Well,
if you're talking about Alec Bohm being...
Okay, fine.
Being up with the team, why not?
Cool.
Or Hoskins.
Are you in better shape than the other teams in your division? Does the universal DH help the Phillies more than it helps, say, the Nationals or the Braves?
I will tell you, it definitely does not help them more than it helps the Braves.
Right.
The Braves had an abundance of outfielders last year that they didn't know how to use. My assumption is that Austin Riley slides right in to be their DH.
Okay.
That doesn't help them better than it helps the Phillies.
Okay.
Or that helps them better than
it helps them
the
more.
Phillies.
Right. Yep.
With the Nationals, I would have to take a look at their roster a little bit more completely and see who they might line up to be the DH. But at least on the surface, I'd say it's equal.
Okay. All right.
Would the Mets take Pete Alonso out of the infield and have him be the DH?
I don't know that I would do that.
Is he a great fielder?
No, he's probably not a great fielder. But if there's no guarantee that the DH exists in the NL beyond this year, doesn't it behoove you to try to keep working him in the field?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Then if that's the case too, you're going to do the same thing for... Would you not do the same thing for Bohm?
Yeah.
Or would you say that this is your rookie year and it's an anomaly? Whereas opposed to, like, Alonso had already had major league experience, right?
Right, yes.
So taking him off the field may hinder his fielding growth and performance. If you use Bohm in one season and then say, and then say you're going to be the third baseman next year, that might be a little bit different.
Yeah, I could see that going that way. That makes sense to me. I think that I would like to see Bohm in that spot more than I'd like to see Alonso in that spot for their respective teams. So yeah, I agree. I think that makes some sense. 610-632-0975 is your phone number. to join the conversation. Yeah, I'm not not overly looking forward to seeing the AL East, but it is just 20 games. They going to be able to beat the Marlins this year?
Oh, by the way, yes, I think you will.
Okay.
By the way, totally forgot about this.
Yeah?
Eric Thames is on the Nationals now.
Oh.
There's your candidate.
Yeah, that helps.
Or he plays first and Ryan Zimmerman's your DH.
The Braves use Nick Markakis.
I don't know. I don't know if he's better defensively than Austin Riley is.
It's a good question. I don't know. They have Austin Riley as a first baseman. That's what they're listing.
Played a lot of left field last year.
Oh, I know. But I think that it's strange that when you've got Freddie Freeman there locked in at first base, I guess it's because they have a million outfielders listed on their
depth
chart.
That's their problem. That was something that we talked about last year, that they have probably five guys that could be major league outfielders, and there's only three spots. Now you got four spots. Makes it a little bit easier. Because you think about it, I mean, between Markakis, Ozuna, Riley, who else is on that roster? That's another name that I'm missing.
Acuna?
Yes, Acuna, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty crowded outfit.
The one that helps.
Yeah. I mean, he's not going anywhere.
No, he's
going to be a positional player.
Agreed. So, yeah. I think the Braves are in really, really good position in the NL East.
For a really long time.
Yeah. For 60 games or 160 games. That's kind of where we are at this point. But that is the hand that we've been dealt. That's what you need to know about the start of baseball, or at least what we know so far, and we'll continue to bring you more of what we know. Let's share this now, because David Murphy joined the morning show and talked about some of the obstacles that were facing the players and the owners as they were getting back into things, and challenges also that the sport kind of writ large is facing, given the timing of everything and how we're trying to work out when and where and the details and all along the way the clock is ticking. So let's listen to what David Murphy had to say this morning when he joined the morning show.
On the line with us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline, joining us here on 97.5, The Fanatic, Dave Murphy from Inquirer.com. Dave Murphy, what's happening, man? Good morning.
What's up, fellas? How you doing?
Are we getting baseball? Is it happening? Do the players think that they're safe? Do players feel like they can show up in a week? Are we getting it back?
You know, I think we're getting it back. I think the question is, what will it look like? And that's where I'm not exactly sure, and I don't think anybody is. You know, I mean, the goal right now is just to have a season that does not completely embarrass the sport, and cost it any more fans than it already has. You know, there's a CBA negotiation looming in 2021, and the players feel like they've been screwed by the owners, and you know what, there's all kinds of contingencies that need to be figured out beyond money and I'm not really sure what we're going to get.
Yeah, Dave, the other part of it is players looked at that 67-page document, and I remember when it came out, there were a lot of questions, but that all got pushed aside. It was like, okay, health, that's great. All right, let's talk about money. Is that how it felt to you?
Because I think the money... Look, I think... We all live in the same world. It's all about money. Mm-hmm. And, you know... people will do a lot of things for money, and I think you got to figure that out before you figure out what those things are. The problem is now is they really haven't figured out the money, and I think a lot of the desire to actually come to an agreement rather than having Manfred impose the season on the players is that it would have afforded a way for these two sides to kind of come to an agreement on a lot of the details that are going to kind of move this thing forward. But, you know, something as small as masks in the dugout, but something as big as what happens if, you know, Darren Ruff, you know, Aaron Nola, and, you know, take your pick, you know, get test positive for coronavirus, you know, the night before the start of a series against, you know, a first place team. You know, what happens then? And then what happens to the rest of the players in the clubhouse? I mean, do they have to play? Do Darren Ruff, Aaron Nola, and the third guy get paid? you know, what happens if a game has to be canceled? You know, do the owners, I would assume the players will still get paid, but you know, that's a huge hit for the owners because that's less television revenue, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And the other part of it is, as the players kind of pushed aside the health argument and focused more on the money, that became the focus of the fan base. So how is it even possible for baseball, after being the what could be the first sport back, nobody's really excited for it? I mean, I just read the numbers for you. 25% of our audience is actually excited to have baseball. The other 75 are at best eh on the whole deal. What can baseball do to try to make it up to their fan base, if anything?
Well, I guess you could look on the bright side and say that hasn't changed all that much from before. I would say probably 75% of the population was eh on baseball to begin with. You know, then you could take that further and say there's 25% who love baseball are going to love it no matter what and will be there no matter what. You know, I think rather than costing themselves, you know, fans that they already have, I think baseball's big loss here is that they've squandered the opportunity to, you know, build a fan base and engender goodwill amongst that 75% of the population that is rather ambivalent about the sport. You know, they could have the whole month of July to themselves, you know, and they would have been kings, you know, their stars would have been all over the television, all over the newspaper, all over the, you know, the website. You guys would have been talking about them nonstop. But now, I mean, now it's like a 180 where, you know, they're going to come back and they're going to have to compete with, you know, the NBA all day, every day. And they usually don't have to do that. And so now you're looking at a situation where fewer people will be watching them than ever before. And, you know, I'm not really sure what they do about that.
Murph, you've covered baseball for a lot of years, and you know the psyche of athletes in different sports is different. You know, hockey players have that mm-hmm. mentality, whatever it may be. Is there a chance, knowing how you know baseball players, that some of these guys, and maybe even some of the more prominent players in the league, will be a little hesitant to come back with this health issue that is still going on?
Well, and that was kind of, yeah. To answer your question and to expand on it, that was kind of what I was getting at with my first point.
Right.
Is, look, I don't think any of these guys are going to, you know, say, I'm not playing. And, you know, getting paid, you know, $8 million if you're Bryce Harper to play baseball, you know, rather than $35 million, it's better than getting paid $0 million, you know, so. The question is, you know, do any of them, you know, the health and safety thing is such a fungible thing and such a subjective thing. You know, like, could a guy like Bryce Harper say, you know, I'm not comfortable playing in Florida right now. We've got a series against the Marlins. I don't want to play there because I don't want to make a trip because, you know, there's a coronavirus outbreak. You know, could they do that? And I think the answer there is absolutely, because that, you know, in theory, they would still be getting paid. I mean, this has a chance to get really ugly. You know, and you know, that's still a big hypothetical, but given the way things have gone, it would not surprise me if a couple of these stars play hardball and you know, claim COVID as a reason to sit out.
I mean, dude, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, Bryce Harper just announced he and his wife are expecting their second child.
Exactly.
We know Mike Trout is expecting as well, he and his wife. Like, I can't honestly look at a player and fault them for saying, you know what, I'm financially fine and I don't want to risk the health aspect of this. But you also said that you don't see any of the players saying they're not going to play.
What I'm saying is, okay. So you saw, look at the NBA. So Trevor Ariza, there was news yesterday that Trevor Ariza has informed the Trailblazers that he will not be joining them. You know, he's going to take a month to visit his son or something to that effect. Now, I think Trevor Ariza might still get paid, but what my point was, I don't think any players are going to say, you know what, keep your money, we're not playing, we're sitting this one out. What I think they will do is, or what I think could happen is, you know, 2 weeks into the season, you know, a couple teammates test positive, and you know, a handful of players say, "Look, I'm not comfortable coming to work. I don't feel safe. You know, I need to be quarantined for a couple of weeks." You know, which would, you know, in a situation like that, I would assume the union would insist that their players still get paid. I would assume if you get COVID, you're not going to be forfeiting game checks for that, because that would just be optics of that would just be brutal. I just think there's a lot of ways that the players could kind of like play hardball with the owners within the framework that they're given. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. It's just funny because you said, you know, it could get ugly, and we're already just in a horrifically ugly situation.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't have thought. Look, this is a situation where you would have thought, you know, two sides could come together, say, look, you know, we need to make this work for a year. We need to get through 2020. We need to do it in a way where we both just share the losses and salvage what we can. And frankly, that obviously has not happened. And I don't see why, you know, just because the season starts, I don't see why that will solve anything. I think the players still have, look, it's their health and safety. And you know, I think that gives them a huge trump card to kind of make owners' lives difficult, you know, throughout the duration of the thing.
Murph, this outbreak that they've had down at the Phillies practice facility down in Florida, do you have any insight as to whether it was, Phillies kind of down there breaking rules, not doing proper testing? Was there mandated testing that they should have done by Major League Baseball, or was it just a free-for-all that has turned out pretty badly?
Well, this is the problem. I can't, again, to answer your question. No, I don't have any real pertinent insight, but other than to say, look, this is one of the risks that this whole situation incurred by dragging on, is that you can't just test players. You have to have the union's consent to test MLBPA players, you know? Now, I don't know what the actual testing situation was, whether there were voluntary tests available, but, I mean, the fact is, you know, the South right now is spiking. These players have been living in the South. So, it's just a normal course of action, I think, that guys were going to start testing positive unless they were actually quarantined. And again, like, one of the reasons why they needed to get this thing done before now is because you would have given yourself another month of control over your players. You would have had July to kind of build that bubble that the NBA is building. Anybody who was already positive would have tested positive and recovered by the time the season started. And meanwhile, you would be able to subject players to a framework of rules that was collectively bargained with the MLBPA and keep them from, you know, going out in Tampa, you know, at night after they work out at the practice facility, as I'm sure has been going on, for the last couple months. This was all part of it. And now it's got a chance to be an absolute disaster.
Speaking with David Murphy, Inquirer.com, last serious thing for you, and then I got one fun one. By 5 p.m. today, will we know whether or not we are going to have baseball back?
And look, I think we're definitely going to have it back. Okay. I don't think there was ever really a question. I mean, the only way is if owners just realize that it's a complete sunk cost. The only way is if they can't come to some sort of accommodation on some of those health and safety issues that we were talking about. But yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, there's a lot of players out there that need these paychecks. If you're making, $500,000 minimum, after taxes, tips, lifestyle stuff, I mean, yeah, you're taking home, six figures, but you need that. You need to stack those dollars while you've got that earning window. And I think at the end of the day, both owners and players, will just be shooting themselves in both feet if they decide that they're better off not playing.
Mm-hmm. And then actually, I do consider this a serious question. Who's the best Batman?
Who is the best Batman?
Yeah.
I know,
right?
I mean, I would have to go, and I would have to. I'm sure I'm ignoring somebody, but I'd have to watch them all again. First of all, because like, how am I going to compare Michael Keaton to Christian Bale? I'm a Clooney fan, but I think nobody.
Oh, stop! No, are you serious?
No, I'm saying not as Batman.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm a Clooney fan in general, so I would want to go back and watch his Batman just to kind of like remind myself of why he doesn't get the props that he you might think he would.
Right, because he's such a great actor anyway. Yeah,
I would say Christian Bale.
Wow, even with that voice.
Who would you? It's such a tough question.
I know.
I mean, it spans. Yeah. Maybe the guy who goes Biff, Bam, Boom, Pow in the
Adam West
series. Adam West would probably be my guess.
Yes, but, there you go. I go West on Keaton too.
All right, so I would have to go back. Was Keaton in more than one?
He was in two of them. Yeah, and now he might be Batman again in the new Flash movie that's going to be coming out in a year or two.
Oh man, yeah, but I mean, like seriously, that was like 30 years ago.
I know,
right?
Yep.
I haven't watched either of those, I would really have to go back. So much has changed.
Hey, 1988, Kim Basinger. I'm going back. I'll be more than happy to watch that.
Hey, I'll take Kim Basinger over anybody any day.
Oh, there we go. There you have it. No Christian Bale around to be seen there. David Murphy, great catching up with you, man. Thanks so much for coming on.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Mark.
Take it easy. David Murphy there, Inquirer.com.
And kind of laying out several of the issues that had to be overcome today for the players and the owners to come together for there to be Major League Baseball starting in just about a week. I don't think that I'll believe it when players show up. I don't think that I'll believe it when plans are set up, when the TV schedule's released. I think I'll only believe it when the first pitch actually gets thrown is when I'll believe that baseball will actually return.
I might actually have to take you even a step further.
Okay.
I might not believe it until the umpire signals strike or ball, because they might be like, nope, never mind, doesn't count.
Because he licked his fingers.
Yes.
This whole thing's over.
Season's over.
Jeez. 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show. We'll continue to react to that. We'll take more of your phone calls, read more of your tweets, and hang out until 10 o'clock. Tyler Zulli's producing right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, let's go over what the Phillies are looking at schedule-wise, shall we? Because this is very well laid out by Corey Seidman on NBC Sports Philadelphia. The Yankees have literally everything that you want on a baseball team. They won 103 games last year, and then they signed Gerrit Cole, coming off a 20-5, 2.50 ERA, 326 strikeout season. So the Yankees are going to hang in there. Yankees are going to be all right. The Rays won 96 games last year. Their top three starters, Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, and Charlie Morton, are as unhittable as any team's top three. Their bullpen has hard throwers and big-time bat-missers like Nick Anderson, Jose Alvarado, and Diego Castillo. The Red Sox, even after trading away Mookie Betts, can still hit. Top half of their lineup remains dangerous. Then there are the defending champion Nationals with three aces, the Braves with the two best position players in the NL East, and the Mets, who have won the season series against the Phillies in 7 out of the last 8 years. Now, Boston lost Betts, Washington lost Rendon, but the other four teams have either improved or maintained. The Orioles and Marlins, that's where we're looking. That's the saving grace series.
Well, the problem is with that, with everything you just laid out, you're going to have to go, I don't know, what, 10-2 against those two teams?
Right?
You're going to make up for it? You're going to have to.
Man, oh man.
And that might just get you back to like a base 500 record.
That's what I'm saying.
That's like, bad.
It's not going to be good. They're going to feel really good. They're only going to get one series each against these, right? They're not going to do a two-game series, right? You're just going to go 5 in a row.
Normally, I would imagine that they like to do the 2-2, but I'd imagine with the travel restrictions being what they are, they're just going to knock them all out at once.
That's kind of what I'm thinking too, right? So, like, when is it? We don't know when the schedule is. When does it make sense that interleague play would happen? Is it going to be interspersed just throughout because it's all regional travel? Is it going to be at the end? That doesn't really make sense. Is it going to be at the beginning? That makes less sense.
Well, it's going to have to be kind of played throughout because it's 15 and 15 now.
Mm,
so yeah. Unless you're going to play, unless a team's going to get a bye every night or a day off every night, it's the only way that it would work.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know how this is going. I'm going to be very curious to see how they fill this out. But either way, it's kind of going to be a mess for the Phillies. 610-632-0975. Now, Jim Bowden said, he's an MLB analyst and insider for CBS Sports HQ, and he also writes for The Athletic. It says, extra inning games will start with the man on second. Before you give your negative opinion, I witnessed this during the WBC Classic, and it was a huge success. Just saying. I'm not challenging Jim on this. I'm just asking. What's the metric for that? Like, what do you mean by a huge success? I don't understand. Like, if you drop a bunt down the first base line and then hit a deep pop-up, the game's over, right? Is that a huge success? I just don't know. I don't want to say that he's absolutely wrong. I just want to know what a huge success is, how you measure that, and how come we didn't hear about it during the WBC Classic about how revolutionary this was and how great it was for the game.
Well, without actually going and looking at the box scores, which I will do for you, try my best. To me, it sounds like that it was to keep games to a minimum amount of innings, would be my guess.
We'll go back in terms of shrinking the time?
Yeah, to make it a 10 or 11 inning game if possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. Like I said, I'm just curious as to what the metric is. If it is limiting the innings, shortening games effectively in a condensed schedule type setting, then I guess I don't have a whole lot to complain about there. But I'd want to know more. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. Yeah, good stuff from David Murphy this morning as well. You know, when he joined Mark Farzetta and Bob Cooney in the morning crew to look at potential obstacles. I don't know. I'm curious to see who is going to sit out. Because here, once again, we said that the Major League Baseball does not throw out rules just for their health or just for fun or whatever. Similarly, you're not going to see baseball players battling for rights or protocols or whatever that don't matter to them. Which is to say, I wonder how many players are going to exercise the option not to play because their wives are pregnant, for instance. My gut tells me that there are like a significant number of baseball players who likely fall into that category at this point. I don't know how big it's going to be, how much of a factor it's going to be on the names and faces that you see whenever the season does resume. I wonder, is your fantasy baseball drafting strategy going to be altered now because of the way that the season's set up?
For this particular year?
Yeah.
I think so.
Considering the schedule, who you're going
to
play.
I think it has to be. I would imagine that the players that have the most favorable schedules, especially position players, and especially more so than that, National League position players who can transition to a primary designated hitter role are going to get the biggest spike up in selections.
Jay Bruce is overdrafted now, right?
Jay Bruce will definitely be overdrafted.
Yeah.
But I think that if you were to take a look around all of the leagues and kind of compare, you know, put them in that geographic region as to whom they're going to play, does it not make sense that St. Louis Cardinals players will be the most impacted positively because of the teams that they're going to play?
Sure.
Considering they're going to probably play the Royals and the Tigers and teams like that, would make sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. In addition to the teams that are at the bottom of their division that they normally play.
The Pirates.
Yep.
I think the Reds will be better. I do. But I think that they're going to have, the Cardinals should have a nice run. The Brewers too, I think, for that matter.
Do you? Okay.
Offensively speaking, yes. I don't know if they're going to be a better team, but if you're talking from that fantasy player aspect, sure.
Yeah. In a real life aspect, I wonder if there are NL teams. The Nationals jump to mind, but I wonder if there are other NL teams that are better equipped to deal with the designated hitter than others.
Pitching-wise, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, the Nationals seem like they would be a team that could survive it because of the depth of their pitching staff generally.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think the Dodgers probably could as well.
Yep, I'd buy that.
I think that Walker Buehler is the next ace incoming.
I agree with you. I think he's a really good player.
I'm trying to think if there's anybody else that I would stack up against another DH.
See, as much as I like the Phillies' chances offensively with a DH because of their options, I really don't care for their chances against another bat.
I would agree.
I really don't like
I would
that.
Definitely agree with that. I think that if there's any other team that could sustain it, it might be the Mets.
Mets have the pitchers, yeah.
It might be the Mets.
I'd buy that.
I'm not super thrilled about it. Hey, by the way, we have the extra inning World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, the WBC stuff.
From 2017. So throughout group stage, there were 5 extra inning games. 4 of them were 10 innings. 1 was 11.
Okay, so it ended games.
Yes, and then in the second round of the championship, there were 2 extra inning games. Both were 11 innings.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's keeping the games down to a minimum.
So, I mean, as cool as it is, in a 60-game season, you don't need 15-inning games where position players are pitching. Like, as fun as that always is whenever position players are pitching, you don't need that in a 60 games in 66 days.
You don't need it, but I don't think the answer is putting a runner on second base.
What's the answer?
I don't think I have one. Mm. That's my problem, is I don't believe that I have one. The only other thing that I could, I don't even know, would changing rules up within an at-bat do anything?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Make it a kind of, you know, almost how you play wiffle ball?
Start with a one-one count
or something like that to speed the game up, or have it be 3 balls as a walk.
Okay, yeah.
That's the only thing I can think. It's not good. None of the options
are good. Just look at all of your options. You're like, these are all terrible.
It's really what's the best of a bad situation.
Right.
And putting the runner on second base, I don't think is it.
Yeah, neither do I. But great success, though, remember. It's a great success. So before we speak negatively about it, just look at the positive results from the WBC.
It's different to me. That's great success for people that don't want long games.
Right, exactly. Okay. Let's see. Is there anything different or new in this news release? From Major League Baseball. MLB is working with a variety of public health experts, infectious disease specialists, and technology providers on a comprehensive approach that aims to facilitate a safe return. Nope, nothing new. Nothing new. Regular season beginning approximately 1 month from today, July 23rd or July 24th. So there you go. Conceivably, ball would be played. That seems to be what would happen. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. On Twitter, it is at Joe Torti and at 97.5 The Fanatic. Okay, Fox 5 in D.C. Is this real? Is a swimmer on the beach just like dragging a shark in with his bare hands?
What?
Is this a thing? Yo. And by the way, if you're pulling a live shark in, you're doing too much. You should just leave the beach. Also, I will not be beaching in Delaware at any time if people are bringing the sharks to me. That is not something that I'm interested in pursuing at this point. Okay. More of your phone calls, more reaction to the return of baseball. Everything seems to be signed and sealed. Will it be delivered? And of course, we've also got to get to one more thing All of that and more is coming your way next. 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show, rolling on until 10 o'clock right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic. The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Together until 10 o'clock. Speaking of the Cardinals and what their path is going to look like, this guy on Twitter says, I'm a huge fan of the 60-game Major League Baseball season purely because the Pirates won't have time enough time to turn into the joke of the baseball team they do by July. This should be quite exciting. Are there teams that are going to be like the Phillies a couple of years ago? Like, are first-half teams going to survive 60 games? Or is it going to be more like you only make it to like the 30-game mark before you fall apart?
I think you'll see one of those teams sneak into the playoffs. There's going to be a team that we didn't expect to be a playoff team that's going to get in. And to answer his question, don't sell your Pirates short. They have an innate ability to suck when it matters the most. And this is probably one of those years.
They find ways
to
make it happen.
With one of those teams sneaking in, I don't know if you have a particular team in mind, but there's one team that jumps out to me right away. And it's not the Phillies, and it's not Gabe Kapler and his merry band of misfits.
Oh, it's not them?
No. It's Colorado Rockies.
You think so?
Yeah, because they come out of the gate hot every year because their bats are alive, and then the pitching is what inevitably does them in. They might be a team that could slug their way to a playoff spot.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong about that because they do. They're a flawed team, but offense isn't where their flaw is.
Right, that's what I mean. Right. Their offense is good enough, and then you know, obviously, with the fact that they are going to be able to go up against Seattle for four games and the Giants for eight, and I don't think the Diamondbacks are going to be very good this year.
No, that's eight. I'm with you.
That might be a team that benefits, even though they don't have any pitching.
With an abbreviated schedule like this, yeah.
Although, to be fair, I mean, if you think about it in the AL, if it's going to be on the flip side, you could stay in that the division, the region. The Texas Rangers might do the same thing.
Yeah, but would that be as surprising? To me, that'd be less of a surprise than
the Rockies. No, because they're building. You know, they added Corey Kluber. No, I think that they've built something, and they could be a team that finally figures it out in a short season.
I'm with you. Wow, weird to be talking about baseball and who's going to like be doing things. See how quickly we slip back into that? Like, see how little effort it takes for sports fans to just start talking about sports again as opposed to like restarting protocols and social distancing and stuff. I'm not saying that it's good or bad or indifferent, but it is amazing how when you like sports, you can just slide into that. That happens to me at social gatherings all the time. Where like, I don't know, like if you fix air conditioners or something like that for a living or you're like an independent contractor or something like that, probably the last thing that you want to talk about is like duct work and that sort of thing at weddings. So like, you know, at weddings or parties or whatever, like there are some days where I'm just like, I don't want to be the sports guy today. Today I just want to be the guy who plays ping pong or whatever. Like, you know, I just want to be that guy. But inevitably, the first interesting sports thing that somebody brings up, boom, just like warp speed right back in there. Talking about of all things, the Rockies and the Rangers we're talking about here on these airwaves. Sports are back, Zuli.
It's funny you bring that up. So the group of friends, my group of friends on my side of like the friend tree are all of my buddies and their significant others. So we were always sports guys,
okay,
right?
Yep.
So on the other side, on my fiance's side, I guess I was brought into that one as opposed to she was brought into, you know how how friend groups work. When you're dating somebody and you're going to marry somebody, you become friends with their friends. So their friend group is so the guys will start talking about sports.
Okay, yeah.
And the girls always look at us like, how do you guys just pick this up? How do you guys just start talking about sports and then not stop? And I'm like, it's very easy. It's a conversation starter. And once you get started, It's much like a YouTube rabbit hole.
Just you can talk about whatever other you want. Stuff. Yeah.
You know, exactly. And so we'll hang out, you know, obviously before everything happened, we'd get together and hang out and, you know.
Back in the old days.
Yeah, back in the good old days. And it would just be, somebody would make a comment.
Yeah.
Hey, did you see what the Flyers did last night? And then it's just, it's over.
Yeah.
And that's how I think it happens a lot. And you're right. We just jump right back into things.
We did it today. We were talking about Keith Hernandez versus Alex. Oh my God. Albert Pujols and Freddie Freeman. That was like the three-way battle that we were having right now.
Yeah.
Just arbitrarily with exactly zero of those players having anything to do with the Philadelphia Phillies. That's the best thing about sports fandom. It could just take you wherever you want.
Which is why I think it's a great idea that when football restarts, or if football restarts, we do our This Week in Pro Football 1977 or whatever it is Fantasy Football League.
Absolutely.
I think it would be so much fun.
I will be in your face about Earl Campbell. In your face about. Don't worry. I'll learn a lot of stuff from these newspaper clippings and stuff.
Well, the problem is you're not going to know what year it is.
I won't. And Callahan, the problem is that Callahan's going to have, like, supernatural knowledge of all
these
seasons.
He is a wealth of knowledge of these
games. He's going to know. He's going to be like, oh, that's the season that this guy got hurt. Oh, that's the...
Well, that's going to be... That's going to be the problem. Is it's not going to be... We're not talking about the 90s, right, where we know what year Cunningham got hurt.
Or, like, that Garrison Hurst got hurt every year. So, like, maybe not. Like...
We're going to be talking about a game in the 70s.
Right. You'd have no clue.
Oh, I'll take Bradshaw. Ooh, bad decision.
Oh, he was a monster that game. He threw for 200 yards to, like, lead the league. Oh, crap. Oh, that's going to be fun. We got to talk him into it. You think that he would orchestrate it?
No, you would have to run it.
Oh, jeez.
He would do it, though.
Oh, great. As long as he's along for the ride, and you too. That's great. That's
Ride, I'll ride your coattails.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I've been doing it for 3 years.
How's it worked out so far? Have you experienced the heights of success that you once dreamed of as a young lad? Everything's worked out just exactly the way you dreamed? I'm glad I could help. All right, here we go. Without further ado, it is time for the often imitated, never duplicated, the one, the only, one more thing.
But there is one more thing.
We have what I called before the show really, really good news from the world of NASCAR, as the FBI investigation has concluded that there was no hate crime committed against Bubba Wallace, that the noose found in his NASCAR garage was, in fact, a door pull that is in pretty much every bay that, you know, kind of raises and effectively, in this case, shuts the garage doors behind the crews and behind the cars. It's been there since October of 2019. So it's not something that was particularly targeted towards Bubba Wallace. And the reason that I say that this is fantastic news is because we've been taking a lot of L's as a society recently. And there have been a lot of hits towards faith in humanity recently. Not saying that everything is hunky-dory now, or that this means that nothing bad will ever happen in the future, but anytime we can chalk one thing up to whatever mistaken identity, misinformation, whatever it is, it's a good thing. There are people that are freaking out on both sides, talking about the media creating this feeding frenzy, or what about Bubba Wallace's role in all this, blah, blah, blah. I think that... the fingers getting pointed around are happening far too often these days and far too quickly these days. It's nice that we get a win here where something was just wrong place, wrong time, wrong context. And we get to relax and breathe a little bit of a win. One fewer hate crime in the universe, to me, is, as the Hulk would say in time travel, an absolute win. So that's kind of the way that I look at this. Really glad to... I'm sad that Bubba Wallace felt threatened and that, you know, everything he thought somebody felt about him, but it's nice to know that is something that was just an accident.
Well, and I think, too, NASCAR as a whole has done a really, really good job in the support that it's shown for Bubba Wallace, mm-hmm. and the support that it's shown for the black community. They have been almost a bastion of hope and just treating people well over the last couple of weeks, you know, and I think that NASCAR has gained a lot of fans because of how they have been decent human beings and, you know, like I said, been that bastion of hope for a better tomorrow.
Especially relative to how I feel like a lot of people would have anticipated NASCAR reacting to the way the things have been.
Yeah, and I mean, is it stereotypical? A little bit, but there are certain stigmas around the sport of NASCAR that I think they've done a really good job of just not only getting rid of a stigma, but getting their opinion, their thought process out very, very quickly and very, I guess, uniformly, saying we're not going to stand for racial intolerance. We're not going to stand for hate. We support our... we support Bubba Wallace as a member of our community. We support Bubba Wallace as a human being, and we support the black community in a way that we haven't seen all of the sports get around yet. I think NASCAR's just done a really, really good job over the last couple of weeks of being, like I said, that bastion of hope.
It's a very NASCAR very purely and completely living up to American ideals. So I think that's a fantastic way of looking at it. So well done by NASCAR, and also well done by the FBI, because truth be told, the world is better now than it was a couple of hours ago when the possibility existed that somebody left a noose in Bubba Wallace's garage. So as far as I'm concerned, whatever degree it is, the world's a little bit of a better place now, and we'll take good news where we can get it. All right, that's one more thing. Thanks to everybody who called and tweeted in, co-hosting the program with me. Tyler Zuli, thank you very much for your heavy work as usual. Outstanding job. I will be back on the airwaves with you again on Thursday. Looking forward to talking to you then. Until that time, have a great one. I will talk to you in a little while here. Be good to each other. It's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.